Sheep don't mean to get lost. A fuzzy, friendly one is grazing in the middle of a field somewhere, moving from one tuft to the next. Before you know it, he ends up nosing some grass on the edge of the pasture by the fence. Spying a nice clump on the other side of the enclosure, he stumbles through an old tear in the wire and finds himself outside on the road. Sheep don't intend to get lost. They nibble their way off track and into danger. So do we. Two people fall in love, go to work, have a family, build a house, and everything on the surface is fine. But at some point, they've stopped trusting enough to confide in each other their fears and their hopes, or to deal with resentments or assumptions that have accumulated along the way. So they nibble their way apart. One up late at the computer or at the office most nights, the other focused on causes or the children. Sometimes they get mad or lonely enough to fall into the arms of someone else, or they drink too much or eat too much or buy too much. Maybe one moves quietly into the guest bedroom, or the other gets self-righteous and mean. We don't intend to get lost. We just do. Like the best in the class who becomes the best in the firm, the best on the links and the best on the board. And everybody knows it because he tells us about it in case we miss it. He seems to need the echo chamber he's constructed around himself, reminding him and us who's number one. But at odd moments, the little boy inside the shell of that big man is socked by feelings of shame and hurt. And on some level, he's always waiting for someone to recognize who he is instead of praising what he does. How did he become the father he hated, he wonders. How did he get so lost? Robert Frost writes, "We make ourselves a place apart. Behind light words that tease and flout, but oh, the agitated heart, till someone find us really out. We nibble our way off track and into danger. Like the teenager who's in as much trouble as his friends, but denies it, offering only half-truths or diversions when asked about his behavior and angry that you've challenged his point of view. Worst of all, he lets his buddies take the fall when he's caught along with them. So much for the honor among thieves. We make ourselves a place apart, like the zealots who say God authorizes their violence, or the patriots who've forgotten that we're a nation of immigrants, or the Christians who've lost sight of the fact that Father Abraham was also the father of Islam, that Jesus was a Jew, that his life boils down to the power of surrender and the commandment to love, and that our neighbor is anyone, from family member to anyone, to enemy, anyone who needs us." Frost continues, "'Tis pity if the case require, or so we say, that in the end we speak the literal to inspire the understanding of a friend. But so with all, from babes that play at hide-and-seek to God afar, so all who hide too well away must speak and tell us where they are." Our experience tells us that we get lost or that we lose one another, but I wonder if Frost's narrator isn't onto something. Maybe we're also hiding from our best selves, from each other, from responsibility, from God, isolating ourselves from the crucible of engagement with the other, which consistently is the way of the cross and the way to life. Now, I hear you. Just keeping on is hard enough. And we can be distracted and unconscious, too busy, afraid. stuck in a bad habit, or playing relationship games or political games that have no winners. But it has never been true that we can line up on one side of the street and honestly believe that what goes on the other side is not our problem. Whether we're talking about a marriage or a city or the world, we are each other's problem. We're each other's business. We're each other's destiny. Imagine the scene that Luke presents. The scribe and the Pharisees on one side, disapproving and smug and sure that they're right. And on the other side, the folks who are sure they're being judged and sure they don't measure up. And yet Jesus welcomes them. Who's really lost here? The distinction that Jesus is working on in today's gospel is the difference between being right and doing the right thing. Presented in a three-part series of the lost, lost sheep, lost coin, and lost son, whom we traditionally call the prodigal, and whose story is left for another day. And in this series, the folks who know they're right, well, they turn out to be the most lost of all. Yikes. I like to be right. I think Jesus is getting mighty personal here. The Pharisees think that being right is the point, and they're grumbling about Jesus because he welcomes people who are wrong. In this case, they're called sinners and tax collectors, but we can read them as members of any group that the powers that be disdain, the ones that we are carefully taught to hate because they challenge the systems that we hold so dear. In a nutshell, if we disagree about God, money, power, sex, race, and class, the story suggests, then we're probably going to have a tough time embracing the other, especially if we like to be right. Now listen to that list again. God, money, power, sex, race, class. That sounds like a really good party to me. Not that we'd do everything that list mentions at the party, but I like to talk about it. And if we don't raise it and do something to cross the street that we normally find ourselves living on one side of, then we can know very well that not much is going to happen. We build walls. We string together fences. We become strangers to each other, or worse. So it's significant, I think, that the word welcome here, used to describe Jesus' action, is in fact the verb to embrace. Now, that sounds like a whole lot of difference to me. When I welcome someone, I can sort of sit back. But to embrace someone is to be as close as we possibly can be. When I embrace someone, I can know how they feel. I can smell them. If I pay attention, I can feel their heartbeat. And if I'm patient, I can match mine to theirs. No wonder folks are upset. Intimacy is the way to find ourselves and each other, according to this teacher. Caring about being right, well, that tends to make us brittle and judgmental and to spend time massaging our egos. Trying to do the right thing is about serving the other person, dealing with our mistakes when they get in the way, admitting that we're scared and angry like everyone else sometimes. It's one lost sheep helping another one find his way home. Anne's daughter is a heroin addict. She writes, "From the moment of her birth, you have hopes and dreams about the future, but they never include heroin addiction. That couldn't happen to my child, Anne believed, because addiction surely is the result of a bad environment, bad parenting. This isn't right," she thought. "There must be someone or something to hold accountable." But after failed rehab and long periods of separation from my heroin-addicted daughter, Anne says, "After years of holding my breath, waiting for another relapse, I now believe there's no one to blame." When Katie admitted her addiction, says Anne, "I struggled to understand how this could have happened to my daughter. a bright, beautiful, talented, and loved young woman. I analyzed and inventoried all the whys and hows. I blamed her friends. I blamed her dad. I blamed our divorce. But mostly, she says, I blamed myself. My desperate heart convinced me that I could have prevented Katie's addiction and that given another chance, I could correct all my mistakes. So when Katie came home from rehab and approached each day with the zeal of a drill sergeant, she championed the 12-step program and monitored her daughter's improvement daily, if not hourly, as though heroin addiction was as simple as nursing a cold. I controlled everything and left nothing to chance, says Ann. But in spite of her efforts, Katie didn't get better. She left home again in the powerful grip of addiction. In the long days and months that followed, Ann gathered up bits of old beliefs and tried to assemble them into something whole. Sometimes she gave up, and sometimes she simply let go. Sometimes she cried, and sometimes she woke up in the middle of the night in a panic. Gradually, her search for blame changed into something like hope. I don't know why or how Katie became addicted, she writes. It doesn't really matter. She's my daughter, and life goes on. Katie and I meet for breakfast on Friday mornings now, she says. We drink coffee and talk. I don't try to heal her. I just listen. Sometimes there's pain and sorrow. Often there's laughter. And I don't think about right or wrong anymore. What difference would my judging make? I believe there's only love. As scandalous, as outrageous as it is, Jesus reveals that God thinks like that mother, that God acts like that mother, that God loves us like that mother, and like the shepherd in the gospel today. God goes to any extreme to find the one who's lost, to the edge of the pasture, to the bottom of the barrel, to the cross, and beyond any hell we can construct. That's how the shepherd finds us. When a lost sheep has been found, here's what I think he whispers in the ear of the one who carries him. We've survived, you and I, after 20 years, 40 years, 60 or 80. We've made it to this year, this day. We needn't have arrived here. There were times we never thought we would and nearly didn't. There were times we almost hoped we wouldn't, and were ready to give up on the whole damn thing. Each must speak for himself, for herself, but I can say for myself that I've seen sorrow and pain enough to turn the heart to stone. Who hasn't? Many times I've chosen the wrong road or the right road for the wrong reason. Many times I've loved the people I love too much for either their good or mine, and others I might have loved, I've missed loving and lost. I've followed too much the devices and desires of my own heart, as the old prayer goes. Yet often when my heart called out to me to be brave, to be kind, to be honest, I've not followed it at all. Speaking one day to a group of old boys, Frederick Buechner said, "To remember my life is to remember countless times when I might have given up, gone under, when, humanly speaking, I might have gotten lost beyond the power of anyone to find me. But I didn't. I didn't give up. And each of you, with all the memories you have and the tales you could tell, you also have not given up. You also are survivors and are here. And what does that tell us, our surviving? It tells us that weak as we are, a strength beyond our strength has pulled us through at least thus far, at least to this day. It tells us that foolish as we are, a wisdom beyond our wisdom has flickered up enough to light us if not on the right path through the forest, at least to some path leading forward. It tells us that faint of heart as we are, a love beyond our power to love has kept our hearts alive. You know, the last time I checked, the shepherd does not ask the sheep's opinions. And he doesn't even care what the sheep thinks. He just wants the sheep to act in a way that brings that sheep and the rest of the flock life. And loving each other as he loves us is how we find our way home. Amen.